Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope. All right, Mr. B, we are on episode number 29 of the Glum Lot Podcast.
We are
glad everyone has tuned in to hear us banter and hear our guest share their story and their experience, strength, and hope. As always, you can contact us at the Glum Lot Podcast at gmail.com or join our Facebook group at the Glum Lot Podcast Facebook group page. So anyway, I got a little something to talk about today.
Oh, do you?
I've been hearing a lot lately about resentments.
Oh, man, those are dangerous.
Nothing is more dangerous to the alcoholic than a resentment.
Did you know that resentments actually kill more people than alcohol?
How so?
Everybody's got resentments.
If there's a
and it'll lead you somewhere not good. If you
there's a resentment, yeah. Is there such a thing as a resentment? A sentiment.
You know, resentment, I love that. You know, and I could start a whole diatribe about, you know, sentiment. Now that you said that, you know, the prefix pre.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but we'll get into that another time.
Okay.
Well, it's absolutely ridiculous.
We don't want to preempt our discussion.
We're pre-board the plane.
Resentment.
We're going to get on the plane before we get on the plane. It's crap.
Anyway.
Yeah. Boy, I got a resentment against the prefix pre, can you tell? And I'm all worked up.
Boy, I'll tell you, we can cop a resentment real quick. You know what it is? Ego.
It's shut up.
Goddamn, yeah.
Shut up.
I'll tell you, don't you know who I am? How dare you? Especially, you know, the resentments I've really owned are the very self-righteous ones where I feel I am so right.
So slow.
And someone else is so wrong and they've
absolutely
done me wrong. And so that's how my ego says, well, it's not really egotistical because you're not saying, look what you've done to me.
Right.
You're saying, look what you've done to justice or look what you've done to the human race. But I'm still the judge.
Oh, boy.
But, man, you know, resentment, some of those, they go away for a while, and then they come back.
Oh, they're deep. They get deep, man.
Yeah.
You know, even when I've done my four-step, yep. I've discovered ones that still exist, you know, right back to second grade.
And you know what I hated to hear worse than anything? Pray for them.
Oh,
God, I hated to hear that. But it does work.
I know, but it sounds so stupid.
Yeah, and then some people say, I prayed for them to get everything.
No, you didn't.
I prayed for them to get everything that they deserve.
Oh, well, yeah, right.
But, yeah, resentment.
You know what helped me with that?
What's that?
Pray for the sick bastard. You know, he's sick. Just pray for the sick.
Oh,
okay,
man.
I can do that.
You know, when it all boils down to it, we're not all that different from anyone else.
No.
But some of the choices we make are bad, too.
Yes, absolutely.
So forgiveness, acceptance, all these things that we don't really know when we first come in.
Yeah.
They are great tools to have in your life to live a serene, happy life.
You know, and one of our recent guests, Mike. Uh-huh. Mike, he always says, if I have a resentment and I'm not willing to let it go, I am a slave to that person.
Yep.
And it's so true.
You really
it's
are.
So true.
Yep. And I've heard letting them live rent-free in your head.
That too, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, that's just something to chew on for the listener. But we have a fantastic guest today. His story is deep.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of wisdom. He's got years in the program. And he's just a really, just a nice guy.
Yes. You definitely know? Very, very, like, rooted, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's reasons for that, and I think we're going to hear about that.
Let's hope so. So let's welcome our guest, Keith.
Keith.
Welcome to the podcast, Keith. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Can we start with your sobriety date?
January 20th, 2016.
Okay. And I guess we'll start at the beginning like we always like to. Do you remember your first buzz from alcohol, your first drunk,
first time.
Your first, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about it.
think it was about maybe 11, maybe 10. And I had, my father drank gin. I got to understand my father's military, very strict. I mean, he'd break your arms and legs for stealing his booze or even drinking or smoking cigarettes. But I hated the taste, but I loved the feeling immediately.
I think that's a lot of people have that. We're like, God, this stuff tastes terrible.
Terrible.
But they catch that buzz, that warmth, that relaxation.
I just pour water back in. Well, there's eight kids in the house. So I figured he couldn't blame me, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Chances of getting caught are 12.5%.
So that's right.
You're good to go. So you liked it.
Oh, yeah.
And did you do it again?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah?
A lot.
Okay. Let's cut to the chase here. So what was your high school days like then?
I majored in mathematics, drafting, designing. I did exceptionally well, but I didn't go to school. I didn't do homework because I worked full-time after. My father died when I was in eighth grade that summer. And my mother couldn't control me. She told me, you can do whatever you want to do. You get arrested, don't call me. So I could, at the time, I was smoking pot and drinking. And I had a job. Got a job when I was 13, full-time. I had my own money. So I worked. I worked nights. And I'm one of those people that I could write something down. And I know it.
Yeah.
That's why math was so easy for me. And I love math. I still do. So I got kicked out. Got in a fight first day, 11th grade. Got kicked out. Went suspended. Went back. Within a week, I was suspended again, fighting. Within a month, I was expelled. Told never to come back on school grounds again. They'd have me arrested.
You're a little antisocial?
A little.
Yeah, and you're drinking, you smoking a little pot now and then too, or other drugs or no?
Back then, no. Well, okay. Vivarin. I used to love Vivarin.
Ooh, uppers. No kidding.
God, I haven't heard that name in so long.
Yeah, stay awake with Vivarin.
Yeah, it'd give you that amped up feeling. But I worked, you know, so I had money. I always had money, and I was 15, I started moving furniture. My oldest brother, who got killed, run over like a year before my father died, that's what he did. So they hired me on, and pot just kind of went to the wayside. It didn't.
It wasn't your choice.
No. And they would drink, get a case of beer at 8 in the morning. The driver would stop.
Prepare for the move.
Yeah. And we'd put it up in the track trailer, and we'd all. You know, in the beginning, like 2 or 3 beers, I was out. They would put me in a cab, which meant I went off the clock. At the time, I was making $3 an hour. So, like, it was a lot.
Back then?
Well, I get buzzed by 10. They'd make me sit up in the truck and wouldn't pay me.
Oh.
So, yeah, I was really proud when I could hold on, when I could drink all day, you know.
And stay on the clock.
Yeah, it was a good feeling.
So your drinking, does it progress over that time, as you're getting into your later teens?
Well, I got my first DWI when I was 18, 1976.
That's progression.
You know, getting a DWI in 1976, that's...
I blew a 1.6, and 1.5 was legal.
Really?
Whoa, yeah.
Boy, they must have really wanted to give you a DWI back then.
Well, I did donuts in front of Tasty Freeze and lost control of my Super B. And the cop was sitting right there at Tasty.
So these wanted to really.
Well, the car ended up.
Now, you didn't fight him, did you?
I called him every name in the book.
Oh, okay.
Big black cop. And he got every name. And,
he was cool. He had to hold himself back from killing you.
No, he was really cool at the end. He gave me an old pair of boots in the back because I was barefoot. And he said, you get another chair here, you can have these. And I guess he just understood it, just a scared kid, you know?
Yeah.
Put me in jail. My friend saw the accident, posted bail. I was in there about 10 minutes.
Poor Super B.
No.
Yeah.
Poor Super B.
Oh, man.
I rebuilt it.
Back in the day, did they do the drug and alcohol evaluation and all that stuff?
Yes, they did.
Did you fool them?
Well, back then, they sent you to class to learn how to drink.
Yeah.
They would tell you, they give you a chart, and they tell you to eat red meat.
Really?
Yep. Red meat?
Eat red meat.
That'll fit you.
No, wow. It absorbs alcohol.
I think Milo wants some red meat right now.
Yeah, my dog Milo's on every episode.
I always remember that. It absorbs alcohol. So you eat
really?
Steak. Oh, yes, it does.
Wow.
And gets it through your system. 2 beers per hour. Your body will absorb that.
So they're giving you all these formulas to not drive drunk, basically.
Right.
They're not telling you to not drink and drive. They're telling you if you do drink and drive.
The counselors admitted they drank and drove.
No kidding. But it was definitely a different time back then, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I went to evaluation, and every one of those were picked by my lawyer to tell me to go, and I've had 9 DWIs.
Oh, in your lifetime?
Yes.
9, wow.
That
makes you a record for being on the show.
That wins.
I think you're number one.
Well, I know.
There are a lot of for instances. Like, what happened was I had a few, but then I moved to Connecticut. My wife and I were separated one of the many times. And I got 2, but I had a New York license. Well, New York, Connecticut didn't have reciprocity.
Oh, so those 2 didn't count towards
that. So then I get a Connecticut license. I move back with my wife. So I get 3 more in a year and a half. New York doesn't have reciprocity with Connecticut.
So you're avoiding all this buildup because you keep going back and forth.
And I kept getting out of it for different reasons. Like my first one was an AI.
Right.
Then I got another one, good lawyer, got that reduced.
Now, during this period in your life, are you thinking, maybe the problem is I'm drinking and driving?
No.
No? Isn't that amazing?
No,
So you just think you got bad luck.
Well, I also drove tractor trailer, and I drove that drunk all the time, too. There's always beer in my truck.
So for a living, you're driving a tractor trailer?
Yeah.
And did you ever get popped driving the tractor trailer?
Almost a couple times. Yeah.
No shit. Because they would just revoke your license, right?
They'd put your butt in jail.
Yeah.
Especially out of state.
You're going through life, and, you know, obviously there's consequences to your drinking with these DWIs.
Well, everybody has them, though.
Yeah, I guess if you look at it that way, everybody's got it. I'm just part of the crowd. Yeah. But you keep going through this, and you're getting evaluated. And has anybody come up and said, hey, you've got a problem with alcohol?
Yeah.
How do you take that? Or what do you do with that?
I was a problem drinker.
Yeah.
Because I would lie and say, oh, I don't have to drink. Which was partially true. You know, I can stop. You know, sometimes I go weeks and months and I tell them this lie.
Yeah.
So they just always, okay, I recommend you do this, and okay.
Did they ever recommend you go to AA or in treatment or in?
Well, I had to go AA many a time to get paper signed.
Yeah, back in the days, they used to stamp papers.
So, but that was just a joke. It was, sign it so I can leave.
So you were not there to get sober. You were just there to get a paper signed. And did you actually go to the meeting or did you drop the paper off and leave?
Well, sometimes I did, only because I couldn't get someone to sign them, whatever. Towards my last few, I just go to the bar with 3 different colored pens.
Just do your own?
Well, I had sent down 3 different people, different signatures. I'd buy them a drink.
So you never heard anything in any meetings that made any sense to you?
No.
You didn't think it applied to you? So the denial is incredible at this point, right?
Oh, yeah.
And once you got done with whatever probationary thing you had to do with getting paper signed, you were done. And you're basically bullshitting these counselors, you have to say, at that point, too?
Yeah.
But do you deep down inside know you have a problem?
I knew I did. I knew since my 20s.
Okay.
But I didn't care.
And you feel like, I'm going to manage this?
No, I didn't care. I didn't care what you thought of me.
It was just you.
Yeah, I don't care what anybody thought of me. As a matter of fact, most people dislike me immensely because of my actions. And I like that.
You were good with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can buy and sell you. I was making 100, 120, 130 in the 80s.
Yeah. So you're making good dough. You're like, fuck you.
I'm going to
do what I want.
Here we go.
A lot of cocaine.
Okay.
A lot of crystal.
Ah, right there. Let's talk about this
now.
Yeah,
let's get right into that.
So at some point during your drinking career, you get introduced to other drugs.
Yeah.
cocaine. Did you say crystal?
Yeah.
Crystal meth.
Used to mix that, yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse was I use it to stay awake.
Yeah, I mean, when you're driving?
Yeah, my best time here at L.A. is 2 days and 13 hours.
You know, I remember back in the, I guess it was the 70s when the whole CB trucker thing was a big deal, and they used to talk about the speed these guys would do so they could just keep driving, you know? And that's, I think that probably is still true, right?
He just told me his truck flew.
Well, here's the deal. Now it's all, they can't overlog like we could back then. We could run 2-3 logbooks. Nowadays, it's all computer. It's all
electronic.
Yeah, you can't run like that no more.
Okay, so you're going along in your life. There are consequences left and right from charges. Any drug charge issues? Anything like that?
No.
Okay.
Assaults.
Okay, so you've got other behavior things that are becoming a problem in your life.
Wasn't for me.
Okay, well, I guess if you're just like, I don't give a shit, I guess it's not a problem, right?
No.
Everybody sees it as a problem, but you don't, so you're like, whatever.
Well, what do you expect? You go out to a bar, you're playing pool for money. Mm-hmm. You're playing foos for money. What do you expect?
Shit's going to happen.
That's right. And I was, I think probably since my 20s, I don't know if I was antisocial because I hung out and
social situations?
Yeah, if I liked you, I liked you. And if I didn't, made sure you didn't like me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look back, I ruined a lot of friendships because in my head, my thinking, they didn't like me or something. So what I would do is automatically not like you.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't like you, I'm going to treat you like shit.
So you're not there anymore.
And usually most people go away. Some, you know, show me how pissed off they are, you know. Sometimes it went well, sometimes it didn't. But that just stopped me. I lived in a bubble.
So you lived in the bubble of your own thinking and your own drug and alcohol use.
Yeah.
Right?
Everybody knew it.
Yeah.
Everybody knew my alcohol use.
And so what about your relationship at home? Is this, like you did mention earlier that, you know, we separated many times.
Yeah.
So that's tumultuous as well?
Yeah, but you know, understand a relationship takes two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I love my wife.
Mm-hmm.
She's not an angel. My friends will say, wow, how your wife stayed with you. She's an angel. Yeah, live with her. No, I say that in front of my wife.
Yeah.
Sure.
Nobody's perfect. There was... Okay, well, let's just put it out there. I have friends that love their wife,
mm-hmm.
need their wife, have to have their wife.
Mm-hmm.
Their life is their wife.
Dependent.
Not me.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of those.
So you're going along in life, like you say, you're in a bubble, drug and alcohol use, living by self-will, run riot, we would say, in the program. And at some point, does something change? Do you have any kind of point in your life at which you had to change to survive?
I woke up one morning.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was going wrong. Nothing. At this point in time, I could go nowhere without vodka.
Mm.
My wife said I was drinking a handler a night. I don't think it was that much. It was probably about a quart and a half, I don't know. And I don't know why to this day. There was nothing going wrong, nothing different. I said, I'm gonna call a rehab. And she said, why? I just can't live like this no more.
Hmm. So it wasn't any one incident.
No turning point.
Just
no.
It hit a spot at which you were like, enough.
Yeah. I got up that morning and said, I'm going to go get help.
And did you?
Yes.
Huh. So you did inpatient?
Yeah. I called that Friday. Every rehab I called told me, don't stop drinking. You stop drinking, you will go into seizures and die.
Right.
And for the first time in my life, I knew it was a lot of vodka.
Yeah.
But I went to work every day, 7 days.
You were functional.
But it made me, you know, they said, we'll get you in Wednesday. Tully Hill was the quickest one to get me in, so the reason I went there. Mm-hmm. And called my wife. I said, good news. I said, I got a place going to put me in Wednesday. I got to understand, the first thing I got up in the morning, went and poured my handler out. And they told me, don't stop drinking.
Right.
So I went out and got another handler right away. It was good news.
Yeah, of course.
Hey, good news. I can drink until then.
But I don't know why. I didn't think I could change. I was 57 years old.
Yeah. Right.
I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know who I was. I knew I didn't want to be that person no more, mm-hmm. that asshole, that just disregard for anybody or anything. I didn't want to be that. You know what I wanted to be? My wife and I ended up going to a restaurant, and I'd see family sitting there laughing and having fun. I would go in a restaurant with my family, always drinking. And my wife knew when I switched before I knew it. I could look in my wife's eyes to tell how I'm doing. Mm. And I would see the fear in her eyes because she knew he was coming out.
Yeah. It's that Jekyll Hyde thing, huh?
Yes. And I would.
So things would get ugly fast.
But you wanted something different.
That day I woke up, I said,
Some would call it the grace of God.
It's something.
Something clicked, right? So you go into rehab. What's your experience like there? You detox first, right?
Yeah, I was only there. My wife's insurance only paid 9 days. I don't recommend that.
How much of it was spent in detox?
6.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So the on the Valium taper. I don't remember a day of it, the 9 days. I remember nothing. They tried to get me longer. It was first 6 days, and they got it extended 3 days, so it was 9 days. It was now on a Friday. I'd already said my goodbyes. They said, Keith, we got you another week. And I said my goodbyes. My wife's on her way. Let's go. Let's just do it. I knew about AA. Been to it for many, many years.
Right.
30 years. I decided to see if it's going to work. I decided I'm going to listen. Now, I listened for the first time in my life when I went to the rehab. I still thank the doctor to this day every time I see him. Now, I paid my $750 deductible, cash. They do the intake, and they let my wife leave. Well, Keith, you got to go down to the doctor's office. Okay. I'm sitting there with a doctor, and he says, you have to take Valium. I said, I ain't doing that. Finally, he says, you ain't dying on my watch. You got to go. Mm. Like, son of a bitch.
Take it or leave it, right?
But I wanted, it's my $750 I paid him. I said, fine, I'll stay.
So the $750 kept you there.
Yes, it was a $750. Otherwise, I'd have walked.
No shit.
But I thank him to this day. For the first time in my life, I did what I was told. But, you know, I've worked my whole life, been successful my whole life. I've worked my way to the top. Most any place I've ever worked.
Mm-hmm.
Not used to being told what to do.
Right. It's tough.
And so I did it. And I have, Tommy's my friend. We made this perfectly clear right from the start. Walked up to him and said, Tommy, I don't need a sponsor. I need a friend. Now, I did not like Tommy when I first met him.
No, where did you meet Tommy?
Fellowship. He's
at an AA.
Okay, at an AA meeting.
Yep. Yeah. The guy loves life. His hobby is taking pictures of birds and everything. And he's a smart ass. You know, he just comments all the time. Well, especially if you're going over 3 minutes. No, I don't know who this guy is.
So you're at a meeting and you speak and you get over 3 minutes. And
yeah, and he says, 3 minutes. I'm like, F you.
I got things to say.
I go, well, who are you? You know. And I had the first sponsor, a guy I asked, George, he's to this day one of my best friends. He had said, you got to call me every day. I said, what happens if you don't answer? You call me back. I said, well, that ain't going to work. I'm busy. Well, that didn't work. Second one says, you got to call me every day. So this time I'm going to do what I'm told. So Thursday, I called him Friday, didn't answer. Saturday, didn't answer. Sunday, who is this? Oh, it's Keith. I just thought I'd say hi, click.
Yeah, yeah.
So Tommy, just call me if you want. Don't if you don't.
Mm. This is a good fit for you.
Yeah. He never gave me advice in the last 8 years. Never told me what to do. And I don't want people to do it my way, okay? But I'm going to be honest with you, like I am with everybody.
Yeah.
I've never read the book. Never officially did the steps. Tommy says, I do 12 steps every day, and the way he explains it, you go to a meeting, that's first 3 steps. You told your sister everything, okay, that's 5, 6. And you're not going to do it again. And then 10, 11, 12, you help other alcoholics. The way he explains it's pretty cool. So I can live with that.
Well, you've got an understanding.
Well, what I do is this. Guys, I call my friend. They say, will you be my friend? I'll be your friend. I tell them just exactly what I just told you. I says, no, here's the key. My program is helping another alcoholic, and that's it in a nutshell. That easy. That easy.
Now, this whole time, you're not drinking.
No, I haven't drank since I got out of Tully Hill.
That's pretty amazing. Are you tempted to drink? Like during this early period?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah. So you're fighting the drink early on, like most people, right?
I was doing 3-4 meetings a day. Now, the job I had, I still actually do help them out. I'd open the shop, go to 7 a.m., go back to the shop, go back to the 9, go back to the shop, go to the noon, go back to the shop, go to the 5:15, then go back to shop, work nights.
So you're doing 4 meetings a day.
Most times, at least 3.
Yeah. I'm
always the 7 a.m., always the 5:15.
And this is keeping you sober.
It kept the voices quiet, but yeah, it wasn't sobriety I was looking for. That's not it. It's not what I'm looking for today. I'm looking for happiness. And I couldn't stop the voices. Now, I go to a meeting, voices stop for an hour. It was pretty cool.
Mm.
So I just started going to a meeting. You know, I could listen to somebody else's mind, not mine, and it would stop. But the minute I walked out of the room.
Start right back up?
Yeah, so I had to be careful. I couldn't, like when I left work, if I stayed in the right lane, liquor store, left lane, get on 690. I had to quick get over.
To make it to the meeting?
Well, just to not go in the right lane or to go home.
Okay,
meeting.
Gotcha.
Everything was to the left, liquor store to the right. When I went up my street to go home, liquor store's on the right, my house is on the left. I had to be in the left lane. I mean, that's how I feared it. I wouldn't, to this day, I fear it. No, I could drink, and my wife will never leave me. I know that. I don't hit my wife, don't hit my kids, don't hit my grandkids. I fight everybody else in the bars and stuff.
Mm.
And there's enough of that.
But your life, I mean, tell me about your life now. What is your life like without alcohol and with the meetings in AA?
And helping other people.
Yeah, and obviously that's...
Freedom.
Yeah.
If anybody's ever been in jail... Ask them the minute they walk out that door, the feeling. The feeling is freedom. Now, the obsession was probably 3-4 months for me. It just would, I thought I was schizophrenic. Hmm. I want to drink. No, I can't drink. I want to drink. I really did think I was going crazy. But I remember the moment it stopped. It was about 4 months sober. Putting a red bumper on a car, and I thought to myself, I haven't thought about a drink for about a week.
Ah, interesting.
And I was free. Freedom like nobody can believe. What's it like helping other alcoholics? Well, it's helping me more, and that's the truth. 100% the truth. They think I'm helping them, and it's really helping me more.
You know, I remember when my sponsor first said that to me, and it was about calling him. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, you don't really want me to call you every day. And he's like, when you call me, it helps me.
I thought
that was bullshit until I got on the other side of it and I see how true it is, you know?
I'm waiting for Matt to get a call around midnight or 2 a.m.
That's our first guest, Matt Y, who also is now booking guests for us.
Yes.
He's helping out a lot.
I like Matt. when I first met him, I liked him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I've known him since he was a kid.
Okay, I met him visiting another friend up to where he was at. So I, right from day one, I just liked him. I liked his, how positive he is. But, you know, that's what rehab does. You go in with fear, and hopefully you come out with hope.
Yeah.
And that's, if you can get that, you're okay. I knew I had to change everything. The bar across the street was the only bar I was allowed in my town. I was evicted for life from all of them, except for him, his family friend. I told him I'm going to a rehab. And I said, you're going to have to get somebody else to pay your mortgage.
Yeah.
He said, don't worry,
Keith. Your best customer's leaving. And he was
to be your bouncer.
Thank God.
Well, you want to hear something funny. It's my oldest boy, before he passed away, he partied hard, too. And shortly after, my son died a year before I got sober. And then I got sober. I think it was about 2 years later, he closed the bar, and now it's a bottle return. I think we shut him down.
Wow. We put him out of business.
Well, we put him out of business. I joke with him. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
But the thing is sobriety. What is sobriety? Well, I got what I wanted, happiness, content. You know what a good feeling it is to sit in the backyard in a chair all by myself, and it just feels good to be me. I never had that.
You know, I know for a lot of us, myself, I'll speak for myself, but alcohol made me for the first time feel comfortable in my own skin. And when I came into AA and I put the drink down, after the smoke cleared, I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. So I knew I had to change. I had to change a lot of things, the way I thought, the actions I took, not reacting. I had to learn about myself. I had to learn about resentments and the way I process things until I became comfortable in my own skin without alcohol. Then I could start living a real life.
And enjoying it.
Yeah, with some serenity.
Instead of fighting it.
And it sounds like that's what you're talking about, just being comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, it took me 2 years to golf. I didn't go to golf course.
Yeah.
I didn't dare.
Yeah.
I was so nervous, probably the first 3, 4, 5 rounds, because I had never golfed sober.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
So and it's even worse when it's the putt. The putting, there's a lot of concentration. And I shake horribly, and I felt very uncomfortable. But I did it because I just love the game so much. I really suck, but I love it. I had to learn who I was. I'm still learning.
Yeah.
I probably always will learn, because I don't know. I didn't know how to act. I did not know how to be social. I did not, and I don't like the word acceptable or normal, because I'm not. I never will be. But even growing up, my mother would always say, you need your head examined. You're not right. You need help. You need mental help. And she knew that since I was probably 7 or 8. I wasn't right before I picked up a drink. The drink did something. It made me leave myself. I could just live in a dream world.
When we first pick up alcohol, it gives us a certain feeling of freedom.
Yes.
You know? And then we can't have freedom. And then it takes away our freedom later in life.
Slowly.
Yeah.
Very, yeah.
Slowly, imperceptibly. It just defeats us.
I was in the rehab and said, how did I get here?
Yeah.
How did I get here?
It was probably even more glaring when you heard the fact that if you just stopped drinking right when you're going into rehab, if you stop drinking, it would be very
life threatening. It could kill you. It could literally kill you.
Everyone said that.
Yeah.
I'd go into seizures and at first the couple I thought was a money grab. I really don't trust people. And then it dawned on me, I guess I am pretty bad. And I started caring, I guess, or something. How did I get here?
Yeah.
How did this happen?
Exactly.
Right? I don't remember it being like this.
I drank with all my buddies in their 20s and 30s. They got jobs at Chrysler, retired, moved into the big house, and they didn't end up like me. So I have 7 brothers and sisters. None of them are like me.
Hmm.
So, and I shared this at the noon meeting today. Someone had said to me, they are the way they are because of the way they were raised. And I thought about this. Because me, I don't think right. I said, well, okay, let's take that theory. If you're blaming your parents, well, you can't really blame your parents. You have to blame your parents' parents because they are the way they are because of the way they were raised.
Mm.
Well, as a matter of fact, now you're into your great-great-great-grandparents.
Right, right. And then you also have to look at the fact that, like you were raised with seven other siblings, and you just said none of them are like me. They were all raised the same as you.
Yeah.
So
I've never blamed it on the booze or drugs. You've never heard me at a meeting ever say that.
Mm-hmm.
It is me. I did it. I was there. I'm not going to blame it on that. Some people can, and that's on them. Whatever. I had free will to do whatever I wanted since I've been 12 years old. My mother loved me to death, couldn't control me. Do whatever you want to do.
Set you free, yeah.
I was 20 years old, bought my first brand new power wagon, Sam Dell Dodge.
Nice.
My mother, I had to pay a third to the house, third had to go in the bank, and I could keep a third. That's since I was 12 years old. I went and bought a brand new car when I was 20, yep. Brand new pickup. And just the way I was raised. So the worst of the worst, I still go to work. Even up all night, you know, doing whatever, I'd save a little for the morning.
You'd still go to work.
Take a hit.
Yeah.
Go
but
right
you know,
there.
We hear that from a lot of people that, and my dad was the same way. He was a daily drinker. He was a maintenance drinker. He never missed a day of work. You know, I never missed work. You know,
I missed a lot of work.
I mean, sometimes I'd premeditatively miss work if there was a big party I wanted to go to. I'd call in to go to it. But it's not like I got up in the morning and said, "Oh, I'm too hungover. I can't go to work." I would either go to work hungover or I'd have a little hair of the dog and be on my way and I'd rough it.
Hangovers are for amateurs. That's
right.
What I used to say. If you're going to hang over, you ain't doing this right.
You got to keep it going.
Well, I'll tell you how bad it was, and I didn't realize it, when my son had died. I started getting these really bad chest pains.
Mm-hmm.
In the morning, it was killing me. But I'd sit up and they'd go away. One morning, it wasn't going away. So I call my wife at work, go to the emergency room. So I go to the emergency room. They see me at about noon, 12:30, do their tests and everything. And the nurse comes in, she says, how'd you get here? I said, I drove. She says, you're drunk. I said, no, I'm not. I quit drinking last night. No, I'm not. It was 4:30.
In the afternoon?
Yes.
The next day?
No, that day.
Right, but I'm saying you had drank the day before.
Yes. Now at 4:30, because they gave me sandwiches and liquids, I was legal to drive. That's usually the time I would just leave work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that didn't scare me. I mean,
because you didn't feel drunk, right?
No.
You're like, I know what drunk is, and I'm not drunk.
Yeah.
But legally.
Yeah, she says you're drunk. No,
your
I ain't.
Blood alcohol content was
who
drunk.
Who cares? I got chest pains.
Well, they gave me Xanax.
Right, anxiety medication.
Well, my son tells me, Dad, don't drink.
And take that.
Yes. Come on, I'm an alcoholic. You tell me don't do it?
No.
So you're supposed to take one every 4 hours. I was pounding them things three, four at a time and drinking. Well, one night I went to the bar across the street and, yeah, I got escorted home. I don't remember it.
Mm.
I threw them out. Okay, that's it for this. This isn't working.
It's not going to work for me.
No, but you don't tell an alcoholic.
You can't do it.
You can't drink with ease. No, let me show you.
Let's find out.
Yeah. So, I mean, this program is different for everybody, and I hope people understand that. When Matt asked me to do this, truth be said, if I can help one person.
There it is.
Then I did my job.
I can guarantee you that somebody is going to hear your story, and it's going to mean something to them, you know? Whether or not they're already in the program or they're thinking about getting sober, they're going to relate to what you say, you know, and your experience.
Yes.
And that's all we can do is share our experience, strength, and
knowledge. And our stories are going to differ, you know?
Very
not
much.
Not everybody follows the program to a T. I mean, yes, we would love to, you know, but sometimes it's just not it, you know? And that's why You know, we don't have that affiliation. We want to hear just stories of recovery.
Right.
You know,
and we're all going, Mark and I do it. We're all going in the same direction.
That's right.
We might not be in the same exact path, but we're all going in the same direction. It reminds me of religion, really.
Right.
You know, if you break it down, we're all really going in the same direction. But different religions are different paths.
And I'm not.
That's what I like about AA. Whatever you think is right for you.
Yes. And I'll tell you, the word God scares a lot of people away.
It does, yeah.
Okay, and for me, I'm not religious at all. Zero. Yeah. I know for a fact there is a higher power, and I could prove it. I won't get into it, but I can.
You've experienced it.
Well, it's. Yeah. I met my buddy Brent. He says to me, Keith, I know you don't believe in God. He said, well, why don't you believe in my God? And I thought about that, and I said, I can do that, because if it goes south, it's his God's fault.
That's right.
So I kind of did that for a few years. Then when I found out I had cancer, I had, and then they tell you 3 to 5 years. I was just coming up on 5 years sober. I said, okay, I'll take the 5 years, because I've done a lot in 5 years. 5 years, I'm good. So I went out, you know, I acted really tough to the doctor. You know, he's, poor guy, he's almost in tears, and I'm trying to console him. And I walked out, I called my buddy, cried like a little schoolgirl. And I had to meet my wife and brother. The store, I won't say the store, they put out flags every Labor Day, Memorial Day, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to meet because we have a flag for my father put out there. And I just cried. And I didn't want to tell my family.
Yeah.
I didn't want to tell them how bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I just told her it wasn't good. I did not tell them 3 to 5 years. There was no sense. And I came in the rooms. I was going to open house at the time, 7 a.m., and I cried in front of people for the first time in my life.
Mm.
Never cried. And it probably saved my life. I didn't think about drinking. I thought about beating this, and just like I told the doctor, that's your opinion. Well, it's 3.5 years. It's not detectable. So I think I'm going to beat this thing.
Yeah, nice.
I'll show you.
Yeah.
But that's just me. That's just the way I am. You know, I have friends with fighting it now. And I don't know if I'm obnoxiously cocky, but that's just me. That's how we're going to beat this thing. Even my son, he was paralyzed, neck down. He got sick and laying in bed. He was home. And his breathing's going bad, and they'd already called the coroner and the priest. And he's talking gibberish and kicked everybody out of the house. They were screaming, and oh, God, I just kicked him out. He don't want to hear that. So he looks at me, plain as day. He says, help me. This kid had been in a wheelchair his whole life, never asked for help.
Mm.
He had cerebral palsy, spastic cerebral. To me, I'm so dumb, because I believed he's going to beat it. I said, want a drink of water? And I remember to this day, he just goes, yeah. So I get a cup and straw, put it to his mouth, takes a sip, and looks over, takes his last breath. I couldn't tell my son I loved him. Couldn't do it. My mother was 2 months later, same thing. She's going to die. And got to sit next to her bed and thank her. But I couldn't tell her I loved her. Couldn't do it. Didn't use that word. I share that when I shared it at a meeting one time. Guy comes in the next day and he says, because I said my whole story, and he says, called my mother up and told her I loved her because of what you said.
Mm.
Ooh.
So it was worth it.
Yeah.
It's not like that today. I tell them I love them all the time. I actually tell guys and them, my friends, I love them. That's just weird. But I do it.
Because you feel it.
But I don't even know if I know what the word is.
Doesn't matter.
I think you do. I do.
Yeah, I think so.
I do. I just think we always, you know, when you're an alcoholic and you're active, that seems, you're so worried about appearing weak. You're going to tell another guy you love him. That's like,
that's just weird.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then you get into a spiritual place and you get grounded and you're like, you know, I really love this guy. Like Matt, right?
Yeah.
I love Matt. And
yep.
I tell him, I'm like, dude, I love you. You know, you're a great guy.
Yep.
I think so highly of you. You're valuable in my life, you know?
His life does have, see, that's some, nobody's life had value to me.
Yeah.
Today, now, if they die, that's okay. You know, they're saying that friends died. My son-in-law, they just found out stage 4 cancer. He's actually not a son-in-law, I always have, my daughter's oldest father. So I went up and visited him Saturday, and I've always liked Les. And, you know, it ain't good. Now, he's supposed to go down to Florida with us, but I don't know. But I told him I loved him. And I think it must have freaked him out because he's known me for...
Yeah, I never heard you say that?
No,
well, what's weird about, like, when you say that, is that the AA opens our eyes enough, I think, that we can recognize love for other people, that we can recognize love for ourselves. In other words, the more we start liking other people, the more we start liking ourselves. But like you said, when I was drinking, I didn't like anybody. You didn't like yourself.
Oh, no, I hated myself.
Yeah.
I knew what I was going to do, and I knew who I was going to be every day. I mean, I prayed to the God I didn't believe in that I would die every night. Just please take me. I don't want to do this. Because I didn't think I could quit. I didn't think it was possible. I just didn't. When I went to the rehab, they gave me hope. Because I did not, all of me years going to meetings, I didn't hear a word you people said.
Yeah.
I didn't. Because I judged you. I try not to do that today. You know, we go to meetings, and I highly recommend different meetings all over.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend that's 5 months, and he's, the one I go to at 7 a.m., he's kind of getting disillusioned.
Go to a different meeting.
That's it. We go to Tully Hill Saturday night. You know, we got, there's 420 meetings. You know how ironic, what a number.
In Syracuse. Never
there's
leave.
420 around yeah. here, huh?
So, but there's 420 meetings in Syracuse. Now, why is it meetings? I like the meetings. I do. I like them.
Because
I like to listen. Some people feel it's a chore. And maybe it is. I don't know.
But not for you.
No, because they're missing something.
Yeah.
There's something they're missing. I don't know what it, I can't tell them. I can't give it to them. They have to get it.
Right. They have to experience it.
Yes. You got to find it, and then you're going to say, I like this. You know.
Well, they have to come to believe.
Well, power to agree.
Because you didn't at first.
Oh, no.
Right? So.
No, I didn't think I could do this.
Yeah.
I didn't think I could pull this off. I said, I'm going to try it, but I've always been focused my whole life. You know, I get something in my mind, boy, I'm going to do it, goddammit. And this was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Mm.
You know, because I was 4 years sober, fighting with my son. I'm going to kick him out of the house. Tell him to get in the car. We're fighting and arguing, going out 4-1 or 8-1. And I put my foot right to the floor. I'm going to run to the bridge and kill us both. I'd had enough. The thought came over me. I'm going to go get drunk.
Mm.
I wasn't mad no more. Wasn't. No matter what he said. Okay. Where do you want to go? Okay. Call my buddy Brent. And I said, thanks, Brent, for the last 4 years. But this ain't for me. You know, we'll still be friends, bud, but you know what? He didn't tell me don't drink. He didn't say any of that. We just talked. And he said, you know, it's going to hurt me, you know, la-da-da-da-da. Somehow I ended up in front of the hall, 7 o'clock at night, because my sponsor, I couldn't call him before 7 or after 8. That's the rule. I live with that. All. And somehow went in a meeting and went home. It scared the hell out of me. So when people say they went out, I understand it.
Oh, yeah.
Justified in my head. And what it was is I had to get rid of that feeling. I had to get rid of that thought. And I knew how to do it in about 10 seconds.
Nice.
Because I know what that first drink felt like.
So you got to stay in the right lane.
Well, it's easy to not do, though. It is when you're fighting it, you're fighting it, you're fighting it, fighting it. No, I didn't have opportunity. It's something I've always been good about. There's no booze in my home. There's no opportunity. I have to get in my car.
Right. It's got to be a conscious decision.
Yeah. I have to make a lot of actions to get near that booze.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped. Before you quit drinking, only time I did cocaine was when I was drinking. So I stopped the cocaine use of it years before.
Yeah.
That was easy. Ain't nothing like, you know, I cooked it. You know, I did all that. Booze was just way harder.
Sure.
And it...
It was always my choice, too, booze. Everything else, whatever, but...
Yeah, yeah, and if the
I wasn't going to say no, but if it fell away, I was fine with it, as long as I had the booze.
Yes, yeah, but, you know... Yeah, this has been a lot of fun today.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming in, and we appreciate your experience, strength, and hope.
Hope I made it interesting.
You did, sir. Until next time, I'm Mark.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Keith.
As we wrap up another episode of the Glum Lot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glum Lot community.